Welcome into In Focus News Radio KMAN. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday morning, and joined here this morning, as we are every couple Tuesdays, by members of Manhattan City Government. We have joining us via telephone today, Manhattan City Manager Ron Fear. Good morning.
Morning, Brandon.
And we have Mayor Yusha Reddy. Good morning.
Good morning, Brandon. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's good to have you both on here. And, you know, right now we're just kind of all getting through this pandemic together, and it's really kind of shed a light on some interesting new lifestyle changes we've all had to make because of this. And I know last week the city made some pretty drastic decisions here with regards to summer activities. And boy, I haven't seen any other cities do this just yet. And I wanted to kind of give you guys the platform here to explain why those decisions were made to cancel all the parks and rec activities. We'll start with you, Ron.
Sure. Thanks, Brandon. So definitely not an easy decision. One of the things that we've been looking at pretty substantially is our general fund, which is for the city, sales tax makes up about 40% of our revenues to operate all the city departments. We're projecting a shortfall of anywhere from $3 to $8 million over the course of the rest of the year. So it's one of those things that we were looking at areas to be able to make reductions in to help us along that way. So we made a lot of adjustments, and the big one, of course, was the summer programs. Part of that, too, was we don't anticipate getting the ability from the COVID recovery to still have large groups of 50 or more people. Clearly, most of our summer programs have those numbers, whether that's at the pools or at the ballparks or the soccer fields or the arts in the park. All of those numbers are continued to be extremely high. The other challenge we have, especially with the pools, we spend about $1 million a season on our aquatics parks, and we only generate about $400,000 in revenue. So there's a large subsidy there already, and being able to hire all the personnel and the guards to be able to do that, and then not know when you're going to be able to realistically open, and ask those seasonal folks to potentially enter into some kind of case management parameter in addition to their normal duties just didn't seem realistic to us. And so first and foremost, it's a cost-saving measure, but secondarily, it's unlikely that we would be in a position to even be able to offer most of those programs till well into the summer. So those were the Parks and Recreation programs. In addition, we had cutbacks in all of the operating budgets, hiring freeze, reductions in travel and training, and reduced spending in all of those general fund provisions. We continue to have several of our facilities closed, such as the Discovery Center and the zoo. So we'll continue to monitor those on a regular basis. Yesterday, we started a new pay period for our employees, and we're requiring those that aren't able to work their full allotment to substitute. And this is part of the federal mandate, is two-thirds pay, and then a third of their pay has to be supplemented by their own leave that they might have available to them. The other thing that we're doing is still separating our workforces to ensure continuity of service. So we don't have a lot of people are working from home and working remotely to the best that they can. And then we have a lot of operational folks that we've split shifts on. So this is to ensure social distancing at the work sites, cleanliness, and that if we do have an infection, that it doesn't impact and quarantine all of our workers, that we have split workforces, that we can still provide services. So those are the main primary ones. Based on all of these changes, we estimate that this will save us at least about $3 to $4 million. And we'll continue to evaluate our revenue circumstances as we move along, and could be additional cuts forthcoming as well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of folks are probably anticipating that. Did you want to comment, Mayor?
Yeah, I did. So I think one of the things is, to me, it's the reverse from Ron's primary obligation as city manager to the city is also our budget, first and foremost. And I think in my perspective, I'm seeing this as also a public health, first and foremost, and the financial obligations, secondary, although a high priority. And I say public health first, mainly because even though our numbers are low, there's this false sense of security that somehow we're good to go and we should continue to have our summer program. But it's extremely hard to maintain that social distancing piece if your pools are open. You have friends and family visiting from other communities to spend the summer with you, and if you take them to the pool, you don't know where that virus is, because we don't have any tests to figure out who has it and who doesn't, and how to. We don't have enough staff to continuously clean some of those areas, so the virus is sustained and taken care of. So it's also a huge logistics issue. And we also give the people that would have been staffing these seasonal programs an idea that, okay, they can make plans to either get a job elsewhere or to do something else during their summer plans. Because if we were to open the pools, it may have been late in June, it may have been in July, it may have been in August. We just don't know what's going to happen. And even though the governor has put May 3rd as the next deadline for the stay-home order, she may extend it. No, that's always a possibility, and we don't know what that looks like. So I think these are precautions we need to take on the front end so people understand. I understand other communities have made some of these similar decisions, and some have not. Some are still going to go and move forward with their pools opening and such. And that's something we need to think about, because if our residents go to a different community to go to their pools, that's fine. But we also need to be sure about the contacts that are taking place. We don't want to have a cluster in the city of Manhattan. And right now we don't have a cluster of COVID-19. We've been very fortunate in that, but we've taken a lot of precautions to make sure we adhere to everything very strictly. And we want to continue that process. The financial impact is already being felt in the city. As we heard the law board conversation yesterday, it's being felt at law board. In the state, those numbers have come out. It's pretty dramatic, and definitely at the federal level. So, and none of us have really received funds from the federal stimulus packages that have been forth. So we need to have all of those discussions still as far as our budgets. Our budgets are going to be impacted for the next couple of years, and this is just the first insight we're getting into that.
I had a listener email in a question about how deeply you guys looked at city operations when making these cuts here to the summer programs. She was asking about the possibility of eliminating labor and equipment costs with a street sweeping service. Has that even been considered?
Not really. You know, I said that the sales tax provides funding for about 40% of our general fund. Some of our utility funds aren't impacted as much, although I do anticipate, you know, water consumption to be less, more than likely, although not dramatically so. So our utility operation revenues aren't impacted as much. We also have federal mandates that haven't been relieved from what we're required to do, and street sweeping is one of those. So in the scheme of things, that's whether or not we would do utility transfers to keep the general fund type of programs going would be a potential debate, but at this time, we're certainly not going to rely on those particular circumstances. So it does a lot depend on the activity and what the funding sources are for each of those different services.
Okay. I believe we have a caller standing by with a question as well. Let's go ahead and get them on. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Hello. Just a word of caution about the number of cases in Manhattan. The reason you don't have a lot of positives is because there's an inadequate number of testing in the state of Kansas. But with that to the side, an item of unintended consequences, during the Bush years when the swimming pools were abandoned, we had, with the high water levels of during the spring, just like we had the troubles here with the high groundwater, it'll pop those swimming pools up out of the ground like a concrete boat. So you still have to keep the water in them, and then with the water in them to hold them in the ground, you still have to put the chemicals in them, just to caution you about unintended consequences of your decisions. Thank you so much for your attention.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to say one thing to that. You know, with the pools, it's not just the chemicals and the maintenance of the pools. It's about the crowd, the staffing piece of it. When we look at budgets, you know, personnel costs are the biggest component. And, you know, I'm pretty sure our cuts are not done yet. You know, we're still going to be looking at other ways to cut. To me, this is, like I said, a huge public health issue because we're going to have to start considering those staffing levels right now. We have to start hiring and training and putting people into positions right now. And we still have a stay-at-home order. And like I said, that might even be extended. We don't know. In my opinion, the reason for the low number of cases in Manhattan, Kansas, is because Kansas State University made a decision not to have 20,000 students on campus. And Governor Kelly made an executive decision to shut down the schools. Those were two critical pieces to remove people away from each other so there's fewer touch points. When we look at summer, and there's no real evidence that says high temperatures reduce the spread of the virus. So I think that this is more than just about a revenue source. It's still a public health issue.
We have another caller with a question here. Let's get to them real quick, and then we'll take a break. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Good morning. In regards to the testing, I liked your comment about that, you know, that we need more information about that, you know, of where the breakdown is. I emphasize on both areas where the health and the budget, but yet I feel like if we don't have this testing, how long are we expected to just be sheltered in? At some point, people have to go out or want to go out. And so I feel like we need support to get more testing, you know, and help us make that transition. Because whether it's next month or 2 months from now, if we haven't done the testing, if we've all stayed in, there's going to be another outbreak. So anyway, I guess that's where I feel like we need some help. I know I called the governor's office. You know, it's very sad to hear that Kansas is either the bottom or next to the bottom on the amount of testing. And we all need to be calling our legislative people. We need you all to help us. Anyway, that's my comment, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thanks for the call.
But I appreciate the comment, and the testing will be a key to getting back to work and reopening things, and that's something we don't have the materials for, the test equipment. It is being produced at a much more rapid pace and being imported. The governor at her news conference the past couple of yesterday and then last week talked about the deliveries that the state has received from FEMA, and that there's two different methods of getting PPE, personal protective equipment, and testing materials delivered from, again, all over the world, as well as manufactured here in the U.S., which is all ramped up. So I think we'll get to that point. The question is how soon? And clearly the volume of materials are being distributed to areas that have more outbreaks, not to say that, you know, one of the things they're showing with this, the state of Kansas has focused on some of our outbreak areas. I think there's about 8 counties now that there's some surges in, and so they're, some of the new equipment and testing materials they're getting, they're putting there. Johnson County has done expanded testing. I know, I think it was last Friday, they ran in about 450 people through in one day and were able to have some of the quicker results, and only 8 of those folks tested positive. So I do think as we test more people, we'll certainly find more viruses, but we're also find more people that tested negative. And that's going to be a key to, I think, how we operate over the next several months as we attempt to either ease back into things in a controlled manner or overcompensate and open too quickly and create more vulnerability. So how businesses and different programs, employers manage those back to work components is going to be key, and having protocols in place and testing equipment in place is going to be a big part of it.
All right.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Brent, can I add a few comments there?
Sure, you bet.
Yeah. So, well, you know what, I think testing is a huge piece, and unfortunately, or, you know, it's a kind of like a catch-22. Unless you're a hot spot, you're not being given a lot of these tests, unless you meet certain measurements such as having a high fever or having a lot of other symptoms. But right now, I don't see us on the radar for testing, even though they might be developing more tests and more swabs and all of these things. And there's just seems to be so many challenges. But that is one of our highest priorities. At our last city commission meeting, we did discuss if we can utilize some of our city funds to get more testing into our community, and what can we do to make that happen, and what role can we play as community leaders to make sure that our needs are being addressed. And it seems like we are kind of having to address these needs on our own for each community. I don't want us to be a hot spot and then get the test. I want us to get the test now so we are not a hot spot. So I think that those are aggressive things that we continue to work on at different levels, whether it's from the EOC or from commissioners or other community entities. The other piece to this is, like I said, we don't have 20,000 students in Manhattan right now. And the tests that have been done so far have been predominantly young folks, let's say under 40 or under 50, that are in that 29 that have been tested positive. So whatever decisions are made at K-12 for USC 383 and with K-State, we also have to figure out how to get tests involved and how to do more precautions. There are 3 or 4 key critical components in our decision-making process, and we have to have different levels of precautions to take as we look at opening up. Maybe I've suggested maybe we need to require everybody to wear a face mask. That is something that's been recommended. Maybe we should, you know, have that. Is there a way we can have people, you know, test to see if they have a fever or symptoms of some kind so that we can say, you know, you should probably stay home? What are some things that we can control? Because there are certainly some things we can't control. So,
yeah. All right. We've got to take a quick break. Appreciate the comments. And thanks for the calls. Great phone calls so far. We'll continue in focus after this on News Radio KMAN.